Taxation or Calendars, 96873, Catherine G. Thomas et al. Versus Cook Drilling Corporation. Mr. Rayburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, Mr. Warburton, if I may, I would like to reserve 5 minutes, Mr. Chief Justice.
Watch your time.
Thank you. May it please the court, in review of the trial court's decision, if the trial court in this case had sustained the motion to intervene by the Hartford Insurance Company, that decision would have resulted in creating a right in the Hartford Insurance Company to come to this state and assert a claim for subrogation inconsistent with the laws of this state as they existed at that particular time. Ohio's subrogation statute for workers' compensation was not effective until October 1993.
Choice of law issues are we encounter them in our practice, and so it's not wholly untenable that Pennsylvania law would control in an Ohio courtroom. You concede that, counsel. That in itself isn't a bad thing, is it?
I agree, Justice Cook. I would draw the distinction, if I may, and particularly with the Restatement 185. Mm-hmm. I would draw the distinction that, again, the Pennsylvania law was entirely inconsistent with the status of Ohio law at this particular time in 1990 when this death occurred.
When we have choice of law questions, we don't make an effort or require that there be some reconciling of the law of the two states, do we? We just choose as between the state, or sometimes among. There might be more than two choices, but we don't require a reconciling, do we?
I agree. There does not necessarily have to be a reconciling, but my concern, and I certainly appreciate your point, my concern, though, is that since we do not have retroactive application of the 1993 statute creating workers' compensation subrogation, by that reconciliation, that would, in a sense, deprive Mrs. Thomas, as the plaintiff in this action, of her rights to a jury trial encumbered by a workers' compensation subrogation lien, which was not the law of the state at the time the occurrence took place or that the action was filed. Yes, I can certainly accept the reconciliation otherwise.
But isn't there an issue before you ever get to that, and that's the question of Restatement 185?
I think that's a real issue, Justice Douglas.
That's the first one, regardless of the subrogation. And you seem to take you question the Court of Appeals taking notice of Restatement 185 when, in fact, it's never been adopted in Ohio and never raised by the parties, it seems to me.
Yes, Justice Douglas.
What's wrong with this? What's wrong with the Court of Appeals knowing the law?
The Court of Appeals can certainly decide cases as it sees fit. But if I may, the Court of Appeals, Justice Douglas, chose the vehicle of the doctrine of abuse of discretion. Under our standard of review for abuse of discretion, with the arbitrary, unreasonable, unconscionable standard, I have serious difficulty, again, with the Court of Appeals election to take that vehicle, of finding that the trial court would have abused its discretion with the precedent available at that time. Morgan versus Barrow was the controlling law in this state at that time. There were only two appellate decisions, neither of which was binding on this trial court out of the Fourth Appellate District, that were favorable to the decision reached by the trial court. And in fact, 185 had been discussed by Judge Deschler in the dissenting opinion in one of those. But of course, there was only one appellate decision, Justice Douglas, that was favorable to the position taken by the Hartford Insurance Company. And when viewing this case as the Fourth District chose to do under the doctrine of abuse of discretion, I have serious difficulty accepting the fact that there would be such an abuse when the trial court is faced with that precedent. To me, it creates a real dilemma from a standpoint of public interest as to what trial judges could do in that situation, if it's a discretionary matter, as a motion to intervene is.
Did anybody, including the intervener, even raise 185 at the trial level?
Was not. Justice Douglas, and I did point that out in my brief, you are absolutely correct, and I thank you for that. And if I may, just on the subject of the timeliness under Rule 24A, the rule does provide for a timely filing. This was not a timely filing. And as the record will reflect, I made it abundantly clear to the Hartford Insurance Company's Pennsylvania counsel that I would take no steps to protect their subrogation rights. I made it clear to them that it is my view that in view of the time of the occurrence and in view of the time of filing, that we did not have workers' comp and subrogation in this state. Therefore, this was a strictly a non-subro state at that particular time. That carrier chose to file this motion to intervene within 4 weeks of the trial, and as Justice Douglas points out, without raising Section 185 specifically. And I submit to the court that those points are critical points to the decision here. If I may go back to just one issue, and I'll reserve any other time that I have.
Before you leave that, the Morgan case is a case out of this court. Does it make any difference what any court of appeals district held on the issue, given the Morgan case?
I agree. I don't think it makes a difference because the Morgan case was the controlling case.
Well, you're arguing that one district said something and another two other districts said something else. I didn't understand the argument when the controlling authority has to be the decision from this court.
That's absolutely correct. I was looking at that, and I apologize, Justice Douglas, only from a standpoint of any persuasive authority that may have been there to the trial judge and giving, of course, Hartford the greatest benefit of the doubt on that. But still, Morgan is the controlling law of this state. And Morgan clearly, as the trial judge followed in the initial decision on granting the motion for summary judgment of the employer, Cook Drilling Corporation, followed the Morgan case. That was cited by plaintiff in the memorandum in opposition to that motion, and the court did find that since the injury occurred here in Ohio, that Ohio law is applicable, and the court specifically incorporated that previous decision into its decision, may it please the court. I can understand what would happen today if such a motion were made now that the law of this state allows subrogation in a workers' comp claim. But my real problem is that Mrs. Thomas had to come to this state to pursue her wrongful death action under ORC 212502. To do so, she availed herself of the wrongful death law of this state. The injury occurred in this state. And to that extent, since we did not have either a workers' comp statute in place or a retroactive application, which would be in violation of the Constitution, how can her rights be limited by having to, therefore, give part of her award to this claimed statutory lien holder? In closing, the trial court pointed out a remedy, may it please the court, for the Hartford Insurance Company. The trial court very properly pointed out that the remedy was for the Hartford Insurance Company to go to the estate and make a lien against the estate. And while it isn't specifically pointed out in the decision, I think the inference is there that the lien should be asserted in either the probate court of the county in Pennsylvania where the decedent lived, or here in Washington County, since there would have to be an ultimate application for approval of wrongful death settlement in this case. That was never done. And therefore, I think there's a waiver of that right. I really have no further comments. I would reserve my time if it may please the court.
Thank you, Mr. Raver.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Warburton.
Members of the court, I would just like to focus on the conclusions that are reached by the appellate in the assignments of error that have been presented. I think it's important to recognize that the case law in almost every instance that's been cited in support of the assignment of error simply doesn't support it. It's a related issue. The first assignment of error has to do with the abuse of discretion, which the Court of Appeals found by the trial court's failing to follow the Section 185 of the conflicts.
Do you agree, counsel suggests, counsel for the appellant suggests that matters of law are subjected to the discretion of a trial court. Do you agree with that? The application of law is a discretionary call by a trial court?
I guess I don't.
Good.
I did not argue that in the Court of Appeals. I think what happened when you read the decision is they looked at the question before them, which had to do with the right of intervention. Generally, the right of intervention, or whether or not intervention is allowed, would be discretionary. And so they then proceeded to decide all of the following issues by
it's
that standard.
It's discretionary, though, as I think that maybe the question is it discretionary once the court is following the law?
Well, I think once the court follows the law, it's discretionary. I think the Court of Appeals should have indicated what they actually, in effect, said, which was the trial court didn't follow the law, and therefore they made an error of law which required reversal. Now, they used the abuse of discretion standard in there, but I don't think it makes a difference. I think if this court agrees with the Court of Appeals that the trial court did use the wrong law in deciding the case, then the Court of Appeals decision can be sustained.
And why wasn't that law, the issue of Section 185, waived?
It was our opinion in both the trial court and the Court of Appeals that there was not a conflict in the law of Pennsylvania and the law of Ohio on this issue. And we argued that vehemently. The courts didn't agree with us at either level, but it was our position at that time that there was not a conflict because of the Ohio workers' compensation statute that was in effect at that time.
But let's go with the law in effect at the time of the injury. What's your argument?
No, and I was our position that wasn't what was important. Mm-hmm. What we were talking about here was not an effort to recover under an Ohio law. Mm-hmm. Our right to recover is under Pennsylvania law. The only input that Ohio law has on that recovery issue is whether or not it is against the public policy of the state of Ohio to subrogate workers' compensation benefits, as we were trying to do here. It was our position that the public policy of the state of Ohio had been changed by the legislature. It had been changed in terms of whether or not those rights would be recognized. Now, I realize that's a distinction, again, that no one wanted to make at any level previous to this court. I would also like to point out that at the time the trial court...
What authority do you have, Mr. Warburton, for saying that we test a choice of law question by its by the public policy of the state? Is there a case law or something that is used to support that theory?
I didn't have any reported cases on this. This is not the first time that we have attempted to intervene with an out-of-state workers' compensation claim from other states with other insurance carriers.
Well, you're suggesting that that's how it is decided, that's how courts decide.
That is how the trial courts decided those other cases, and they weren't appealed. And again, that's not, quote, authority, unquote. That's
right.
Only what my experience has been.
Do you even need 185 to get you into Pennsylvania?
I'm sorry?
Do you even need 185 to get you into Pennsylvania? Do you even need restatement 185 to declare that Pennsylvania is the form or the law that should be applied? Or would you, I don't want to make your argument for you, but would you just make that where the contract was consummated and the benefits were paid, in fact, choose the forum?
Well, yes, from a standpoint that it's a contract action and the contract provisions and the contract performance was done in Pennsylvania.
Why did you argue that?
Well, I was trying to avoid the conflicts problem in the courts below totally. And, of course, I didn't succeed, and each court then went off on what they thought the appropriate solution to the problem
should be. Well, 185 raises the conflict. That's how the conflict gets raised. on a straight contract basis, you wouldn't even have a 185 issue, would you?
No, that's correct, you would not. And I believe there's a case from this court, Fannin, is it?
So if we don't apply 185, what's your best argument?
The best argument is that it's a contract action that is from another state.
Isn't your best argument what the Court of Appeals said, that when a payor is paid workers' compensation benefits according to their state law, it would be unjust to deny a payor of workers' compensation the right to subrogation just because the pay brings a tort action against a third party in another state? That doesn't require 185, does it?
No, it's a sense
of fairness is what the Court of Appeals came down with. Maybe I don't know if they're right or not, but that seems to be their rationale.
I think so. And they somehow found 185 was appropriate and should have been used by the trial court.
If the tables had been turned here and 185 had been against you, is it fair to ask you if you'd be in here complaining the Court of Appeals shouldn't sua sponte raise 185 to decide the case adverse to me when nobody even thought about it or talked about it?
I think if 185 was adverse to me, we never would have tried to intervene.
But you didn't raise 185 in the trial court.
No.
Why?
That was not my position. I mean, my position may have been legally inappropriate, inadequate, whatever, but that was not my position.
It sounded to me like you just said because of 185 you intervened.
No, I intervened because we had the right from Pennsylvania and because, in my view, we had no longer the public policy argument in Ohio that would prevent the bringing of the action.
Understand.
There's an argument about timeliness that this court may or may not want to address. The only case that was cited by the appellate involves a motion to intervene that was filed some 8 days before the trial. In this case, our motion to intervene was filed more than 3 weeks before the trial and would not have delayed the trial or otherwise interfered with the trial of the case if it had gone forward. In fact, I think the trial did go forward and the case was settled in the middle of the trial.
Why did you take so long to intervene?
I didn't get the file to do anything with it until September of 1994. There's two letters that are part of the record. I think the most recent one to that date was July of 1994, where plaintiff's counsel or counsel for the estate indicated that they were not going to protect the workers' compensation lien. So I, in about roughly 2 weeks, I put this together and got it filed. But that's why it wasn't filed before. I didn't have it.
Workers' compensation contract of insurance specify rights of subrogation, or do you just take that from Pennsylvania state law?
I believe there's subrogation in the policy, but there is no policy in the record, so I can't represent to the court specifically that it's there.
That's why I ask, because all you do is cite us to Section 319 of the Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Act, which wouldn't necessarily be controlling vis-a-vis a contract between the parties, would it?
I think under Pennsylvania law it would. To a great extent, the application use and day-to-day operation of workers' compensation subrogation in Pennsylvania was basically information supplied to me by Pennsylvania counsel. There are always a lot of nuances in these things that we don't always get.
So if you make that argument, would it not follow then that every statute becomes part of every contract? And thus no parties could in fact contract contrary to statute or to avoid the statute?
I think that's true as to some statutes. I don't think it's true as to all statutes. I think unless there are any other questions, that's all I have to present.
Thank you, Mr. Warburton. Mr. Rayburn, you saved a little over 7 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Justice Douglas, if I may, on your last point, and I'll apologize for use of this term, but the looseness and cavalier attitude of the Hartford Insurance Company is very troubling in this case, in that you are correct. There is no contract in the record. They are simply relying on a statute. They came into the Washington County Court of Common Pleas without any authority, citing 185 either way. simply tried to argue that now the public policy of this state is such that it should recognize an out-of-state carrier's workers' comp claim per a statute. Again, they failed to address the simple issue of whether or not this would be, in essence, retroactive application of a 1993 statute. That statute clearly is not retroactive, and I think that this case cannot be steered in the direction that Hartford would like to steer it as a public policy case. It's a clear matter of whether we had subrogation or whether we didn't, and whether they raised Section 185 or didn't. And moreover, that trial court, when viewed with the issue of abuse of discretion, had controlling law, and that was the Morgan case, clear law of this honorable court. And that case directed what he should do.
Procedurally, we get here because the Hartford moved to intervene.
Correct.
You opposed it. The trial court granted it. I take it that, denied it.
Denied, yes.
I take it then on the same waiver kind of thinking that your client did not argue that the policy wasn't in the record as a basis for not preventing intervention. That wasn't ever an argument, was it?
Justice Cook, you are entirely correct. That was never an argument. And to be perfectly honest, I picked up on it as it came to the court here. The record, of course, went to the issues that I have raised here today.
The whole intervention issue, you thought it was fine, but it was wrong. I mean, it would be okay, but for the problem with Ohio law and Pennsylvania law.
I had to take the very simple position that Ohio did not allow workers' compensation subrogation at the time of this tragedy, the death of this young man, or even as of the time of filing the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And I understand that with the current statutes, that may be a gray area, but going back, this statute became effective about a year after the lawsuit was filed. And I simply argued that therefore could be no retroactive application at that time. And the trial judge aptly pointed out the pertinent section of the Constitution wherein he found that would not be retroactive. I really have no further comments unless the court would have a question.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Oral argument in case number 96907 has unfortunately been waived. Marshal, please adjourn court.